All right, so my name is John Eggert. I'm from Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and I guess I wanted to it's a transition from, you know, looking at, from the outside at the planets and making observations like mass and radius, and we're trying to do kind of come at it from the completely opposite point of view and try to put the planetary matter into the laboratory and try to understand what's actually happening at the sorts of pressures and temperatures that's actually exists within those planets. And hopefully, I guess the big question that we had at lunch today was, you know, how can you make the connection from the few things that you can measure about these planets from the observational, you know, from the satellites and the telescopes, and what can we actually say from the material properties, and is there a way to try to connect the two? So I think that's a big question. So as with a lot of experiments on really big facilities, there's a lot of collaborators from all over the world. So I'm going to start by kind of introducing what we do. So we use really big lasers to dynamically compress materials to really high pressures. And when we do that, the first thing I'll talk about is trying to do a ramp compression experiments to measure the stress density equation of state, which is kind of the raw data that goes into all those mass radius plots that show the, you know, where would iron go, where would magnesium silicates go, and that sort of stuff. And then second, to try to say, can we start to understand the structures of these materials under planetary interior conditions? So, I mean, I think this should be obvious, but there's, you know, materials are at really high pressures and pressures and densities, a lot of places within the universe, including these interiors of lots of planets. So this is my version of this plot, and what I've plotted in the color scale here is the central pressure using a very simple, you know, uniform model, and so these are all these sort of equation of state plots look very similar in this mass radius plot, but I've hashed out here the center pressure of the planet between 1 and 50 megabars, which is the range that we can now access at the NIF. And so we've done experiments between, you know, in that pressure range. We can do equation of state measurements over that range, and we're beginning to be able to do structural measurements over that range. And so if you follow kind of Earth-like equations of state, that puts you between about half to 20 Earth masses in the sorts of conditions that we can actually put materials at and try to measure something about them. So what we use, one of the facilities I'll talk about is the National Ignition Facility at Livermore. So this is a really big laser. So it's a 2 megajoule laser, of which we use less than a quarter of that in most of our experiments. This is a really big building, so it's equivalent to about 3 football fields. So this is the laser bay. The experimental hutch is, or the experimental target chamber is down in this part of the building. This shows two of the four laser bays. So this is half the beams. So there's 192 laser beams, each one of which is about this large in diameter, so it doesn't melt the glass that it's going through. Each one of these beams will put out a little bit over 5 kilojoules of laser energy in 30 nanoseconds. And you can see a couple of workers here, and I think there's a couple of workers down farther also that you can have a really hard time seeing them. The target chamber is quite large, so it's about 3 meters in radius. These circles here are where the beams come in. So each one of these circles has 4 of these laser beams coming through it. And then on the equator up here, which you can't quite see, is where most of the diagnostics are. That's looking from the top down. Yeah. That's
real?
That's so this is a sphere. So it's a 3 meter radius sphere, so it's a very large sphere. This is as it was being built, and so there's I mean, now no one goes inside it anymore. Now there's glass you know, each one of these has a four laser beams coming into it.
Into it.
So this is on the inside, and then the experiments actually have target positioners that point into the center of this chamber, and all of these beams point at the same spot within the center of the target chamber. So what we use are, we use a low Z ablator, where for us, low Z means something like aluminum or lower. The reason for that is because we shine a very powerful laser onto it and we ablate the surface. And so we get a plasma jet moving back into the laser beam, which then heats up and gives it an equal opposite reaction, pushing a very high pressure or stress wave through the material. And what we're trying to measure is what happens as that stress wave moves through the material. What does that do to the properties of the material? These are some photographs that were taken at the Omega facility, which is a much smaller laser with only 60 beams at about 500 joules per beam in Rochester, New York. But here you can see, the glow, the beams, there were six beams pointed at this surface here, which was a carbon surface, and then you got this carbon plasma coming off, and this is a diagnostic that the plasma stagnates against it, and so it makes kind of a pretty picture, and you can see kind of particles flying back. This is the exterior optic of a velocity interferometer to try to look at the backside of the experiment. One of the things we can measure is velocity of the shock wave or the motion through a window. We use things called Hall ROMs in this sort of field, certainly for fusion ignition experiments and such. We use a gold capsule. So this at NIF is about 11 millimeters long and about 6 millimeters in diameter. We at NIF take 192 beams and point them into this gold Hall ROM, which then you heat up the gold, make it into a plasma, and then you get this nice uniform photon gas within the Hall ROM, which then gives a very uniform ablation drive to the sample. And for us, it's really important because we then put our sample on the side of this Hall ROM, and we expose to this very hot gas of photons, and we're able to get a very uniform drive, so we can get the pressure drive at this point on the sample and at this point are essentially identical. And that's really important for measuring the equation of state experiments that I'll be talking about in a second. And typically we talk about the temperature, this photon gas temperature, black body temperature of sort of radiation temperatures on the order of 200 electron volts. And so this may not be as necessary here, but to put you into a frame of reference, 200 EV is about 2 million degrees, which is about 400 times the temperature of the surface of the sun, about halfway to the center in the radiative zone. So in the laboratory, in 30 nanoseconds, we can actually, we're routinely, reproducing the conditions within, deep within the sun. So these are not small things. And we want to measure, I said we were going to, within 100 microns of this 200 electron volts, we want to measure solid matter and try to determine what the crystal structure and things like that are. And so we've got very large temperature gradients and very large stress gradients, and we want to try to measure, as close as we can to equilibrium, stress density, temperature, melting, solid-solid phase transitions, structure, strength, and all of those sorts of properties. There's two paths through phase space that are interesting to talk about because they're easy to define. The first is the isentrope. So if you slowly compress a material, you'll follow something approximately like the isentrope, which is relatively cold. Or if you send a shock through the material, you'll follow a Hugoniot, which is the locus of points through pressure, temperature, density space. And what you find on the Hugoniot, when you have a single shock, very rapidly you put all of your energy into temperature rather than density. And so you kind of reach a maximum compression. And so for us, if we want to go up to higher pressures and keep the temperature low so that we actually study the material rather than the plasma, we need to try to stay away from this Hugonio and stay away from shocking the material. And so for us, it's very important to try to stay as close as possible to the isentrope, which we can't always do because there's lots of non-reversible sorts of interactions that happen, like the material. In all of our experiments, we're compressing so rapidly that it's truly a uniaxial strain environment, but the material's not strong enough to maintain, the lattices don't just compress by strains of two or three, but they release in the strength relaxes, and the plastic deformations of the lattice takes you off of the isentrope, and there's other sorts of things that can take you to higher temperatures than the isentrope. So for us, the isentrope is about as cold as we can get. So what we'd like to do is to take this laser and vary the intensity of the laser as a function of time and try to ramp compress it. So as we compress this material, the material properties, the stress density increases so that the sound speed gets larger and larger the higher pressure you get to, which means that this wave that's coming in later in time is moving more quickly than the lower pressure. And so the high pressure portion of the ramp overtakes the slower lower pressure part, and you form a shock, which I just said we don't want to do because we want to keep the temperature low. And so for us, it's very important to have a lot of control over the intensity profile of the laser, the intensity history of the laser, to try to preserve this ramp compression through as much of the sample as we can. And for the first experiments I'm going to talk about, we're trying to measure the equation of state, the stress density equation of state, which means that essentially what we're doing is we have different thickness samples that we're going to drive at exactly the same history, and then we're going to measure the velocity of this surface as the ramp breaks out the back side of it. And from that, if we know the height of these steps, then we can get the sound speed as a function of pressure, and we can integrate the sound speed to get the stress density. So that's the experiment we're trying to do. And the problem is, if you make it too thick or you don't choose the right shape of the laser to put into it, then you'll get a shock forming, and that'll kind of destroy the experiment. Or if the wave breaks out the backside and then releases this is a vacuum on this surface, so the pressure here is always zero, then you have the low pressure reverberate back and interact with the drive, which then makes it so that you can't measure the same drive between the different samples. And so we have to have the sample has to be designed to be the same as the laser. Unfortunately, the NIF facility was built to give very reproducible laser intensity profiles and very predictable. And so we're able to actually at every point along this say we want to get the intensity, and we can get it to about 1%. And so all the way up here we can say exactly what we want, and incredibly they actually deliver it. So this is actual data. This is a velocity interferometer. This is our raw data that's looking at the surface of the material. This target was a nanocrystalline diamond target, so it was a copper or a carbon target. Every time you see these fringes shift, the shift in phase space is proportional to the velocity. And so by looking at the shift of the fringes, we can get the velocities. And so these are the velocities as a function of time. And you see that the distance between the time per distance in here, the velocity of this wave is slower than the velocity it is up here. And so from this you can extract the sound speed. This is a Lagrangian sound speed as a function of the free surface velocity. And that's shown here. And the sound speed, like I said, increases with pressure. And you can integrate that, and this blue line here is our data with error bars. So this shows that we got up to 5 terapascal. So 5 terapascal is about 50 megabars. And so up to 50 megabars, we can ramp compress diamond essentially. And so that's where this my claim on the first slide that we can actually produce at this facility 50 megabars of pressure comes from. We've done the same sort of experiment with iron. We've compressed iron to 8 megabars, which is the green data here. The dashed thing marked isentrope is a model that's supposed to say what the isentrope is, but this is the first time that people have actually measured the stress density close to the isentrope. On this experiment, iron's got a large phase transition at about 130 kilobars, which is way down here. It turns out that we wanted to have a steady shock to get us into the HCP phase in iron, and so we had to jump over that phase transition. We had to overdrive it, and it actually took quite a large shock to get through there. So that's about 70 GPa shock to get through there, which is why there's this kink initially. Let's see. So we can do these sorts of stress density measurements, but we'd also like to get more information about the phase transitions, the structure, specifically things like the melt line, and we'd like, possibly some information about all these other things too. So we've been developing X-ray diffraction. So this is meant to be kind of a justification for why structure is important. The difference between a core that was graphite and a core that was diamond in a planet would be pretty significant. And so really the structure is kind of the starting point for all of the theorists to say, what are the material properties of this material? If you don't know what structure to start with, you're probably not going to calculate the right behavior. And just as examples, 1.6 times difference in density, 10 times difference in compressibility, and 500 times difference in strength, and all those sorts of things can matter. The other really interesting thing about the structures of materials is that in the past 10 years or so, it's turned out that the theorists have been trying to do predictions of what the structure is at high pressure, and they found that instead of going what traditionally everyone thought, both of these were earlier this year. Both of these we weren't able to actually